You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, October 26, 2016.
Is it two boys kissing, or is it two girls kissing, or is it a girl and a boy kissing? Who's kissing? And at some point you're like, this is glorious.
The Cardinal Stage puts on Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice with an all-female cast, reversing the gender casting used for the Elizabethan stage. We'll hear an excerpt of an arts interchange conversation coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Richard Fish looks into the frightening world of internet outages on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Bloomington resident Aaron Pollitt was one of more than 140 people arrested this past weekend while opposing construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Pollitt says he was arrested at about 11 a.m. Saturday morning. He was part of a group that marched toward the pipeline construction site near Standing Rock in North Dakota. Video released yesterday by The Intercept shows a group of protesters marching peacefully until they are eventually surrounded by armed police. Video shows police marching toward the group, then shoving some protesters before eventually grabbing some people and throwing them to the ground. It appears that some protesters attempted to retreat, but police chased them. It was during that time that Pollitt says he was arrested.
I mean, a lot of people got tackled and pepper sprayed, but my group was surrounded. We were like, oh, well, you got us. So that went pretty peacefully. And then they handcuffed us all and put us into buses that they had driven up, shipped us all to Morton County Jail, and processing until they finally put us in cells in our jail blocks. That took a lot of people, didn't get to the jail blocks for something like 16 hours of processing. Just because there's so many people. A lot of standing around, taking handcuffs, not getting fed, going to the bathroom. It was pretty uncomfortable.
Pollitt was released from the Morton County Jail on Sunday. He spoke today via cell phone from North Dakota, where he was still waiting to be arraigned. Charges may include inciting a riot and criminal trespass. He says concerns about the environment were a large part of what inspired him to participate in the actions at Standing Rock.
I'm a big believer in the great changes that we as modern people need to make in the way we use the resources of our planet. But also, I'm really, really grateful to be able to combine that effort with the effort of the Native peoples here and their fight to have their old treaties recognized.
Pollitt is not the only Bloomington resident to travel to Standing Rock recently. The actions have drawn several participants from the Bloomington area, including some residents who brought supplies to the camp. Pollitt says despite being arrested, participating in the protest has been, quote, a profound experience, unquote.
It's certainly the greatest act of nonviolent protest or protection. You know, people here like to call it protecting the water. Not protesting against something, but protecting something. But it's one of the greatest acts of nonviolent action towards stopping something that I've certainly ever been a part of, or I've maybe seen in my lifetime. But it's also, you know, some of the greatest violent opposition of the state that I've ever been a part of. They're really cracking down on peaceful protesters, and it's been sad to see.
Police also arrested at least one journalist in the incident. Jihan Hafiz, who later published her footage with The Intercept. A leader from the Standing Rock Sioux Nation has asked the U.S. Attorney General to investigate whether civil rights violations occurred during the police crackdown.
The Bloomington Parks Department and the Bloomington Parks Foundation are laying plans for a fundraising campaign for Switchyard Park. In a meeting last night, the Board of Parks Commissioners unanimously approved an agreement with the foundation to co-fund a part-time development officer to coordinate the campaign. Recreation Division Director Paula McDevitt said it was time to hire a professional since the city is in the final stages of designing the Switchyard Park.
Both organizations realizing that they are volunteer-based, and to be able to structure and run a fundraising campaign would be very difficult for a group of volunteers. Likewise, we're running the department and have a lot of projects going, so we are proposing this partnership, as I said, to co-fund this position. It would be a part-time position brought in hopefully by the end of this year, if not beginning of next year, to actually structure the campaign from beginning to end. So to look at what the fundraising need is and establish a goal, to establish some partnerships, some relationships, to host some fundraising events, and to market the project out in the community.
Commission members also approved a contract with the company Fields Environmental for an assessment of a property located at the northwest corner of Building Trades Park on House Street. Operations Director Dave Williams said the owners have offered the property to the Parks Department for purchase, and the environmental study is the first step in evaluating the property.
This is characterized as a phase one environmental assessment, kind of a cursory historic review. What is the history of this site? Was it once a gas station? Is it something that we should be concerned about? Phase ones don't often lead to phase twos, but phase two is a more rigorous environmental reconnaissance, including oftentimes sampling of soils, things of that nature.
Williams said the environmental contract includes testing for asbestos. He also said upgrades are planned for Building Trades Park, as well as the Allison Jukebox Community Center, located on South Washington Street. SCS Construction has bid on both projects. Williams described the work to be done at Allison Jukebox.
This will include a cosmetic rehabilitation to the restrooms at that facility, some new plumbing, upgrades to the electrical distribution service, some interior door lighting and flooring replacement.
Williams said the work to be done at Building Trades Park includes a new roof for the building, among other things. The Board of Parks Commissioners approved awarding a contract for both projects to SCS Construction.
Convicted sex offenders will not be allowed to participate in trick-or-treat activities in Bloomington again this year. All convicted sex offenders will be required to attend a mandatory meeting during the city's trick-or-treating times. The convicted sex offenders will instead watch a movie at the meeting. The county is continuing this initiative after its success in the past 15 years. Sex offenders who are staying at an approved residence are advised to keep their front porch lights off during trick-or-treating hours and to not decorate their houses for Halloween.
According to a press release from the Department of Natural Resources, 11 sites in Indiana State Forests are being considered for nature preserves. This would mean extra protection of the areas due to their ecological features. The prohibition of logging is a protection under nature preserve status. Areas in Clark, Ferdinand, Harrison Crawford, Morgan Monroe, Owen Putnam, Salamone, and Yellowwood State Forests are being considered for this status. Sites near our local community are Ravinia Seep Spring in the Morgan Monroe State Forest and Lucas Hollow in the Yellowwood State Forest. It is not known when the final decision will be made. For more information about nature preserves and a list of prohibited activities, visit www.in.gov/DNR. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Starting this Friday, October 28, running through November 13th, the Cardinal Stage Company presents Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice with an all-female cast. Doug Storm spoke with Cardinal Stage Artistic Director and Play Director Randy White and the actresses who play Shylock and Portia, Liz Pazick and Leslie Ann Handelman, for an episode of Arts Interchange. This excerpt centers on the way the all-female cast may or may not make a difference in the way an audience will receive the performance.
I'm Randy White. I'm the artistic director at Cardinal Stage and the director of this production of Merchant of Venice.
I'm Liz Pazick, actor and playing the role of Shylock.
I'm Leslie Ann Handelman, also an actor and playing the role of Portia.
Well, first, thank you. And let me just ask, what's up with the all-women cast?
Well, I think that it started with a very simple idea of looking at our season and realizing that as a company that does a mix of new plays and classics, that there is a problem with gender on our stage. And we, in looking at issues of diversity, one of the things we identified was wanting to get more roles for women. And we came up with this idea that we're going to actually reach for a 50-50 gender split on the Cardinal stage. And so if you're doing that and you are doing classic work, you are in conflict. and so the decision was made to look at Merchant as possibly a play that we could consider doing all female. And so when we looked at Merchant and the issues in Merchant around gender identity, around gender construction, as often in Shakespeare comedies, it made sense to put it together. So gender parity, gender opportunity, you know, so that actors get a chance to play roles that they don't necessarily get to play. And then, you know, it made sense in the single sex environment of Shakespeare's time that we would just invert that and look at a single sex environment from the other side. That said, even though these are all women, we are in a world where gender exists. And so they are playing men and playing women. And finally, I would just say everybody in this play, including the women who are playing men and the women who are playing women, also get to play men. They put on men as part of inside the play. And so gender is constructed in all kinds of different ways in the play. And that's just kind of interesting.
As you say, it's a reversal of the original setup of Shakespeare's theater, I suppose, right? So all men played that. So does it not really have much of an effect in terms of the play itself, right? Like that's...
It's a fabulous question, and I have no idea yet. I can turn it over to the actors, and they can talk a little bit about it in terms of what it is to play it, what we expect the audience to perceive. I'm at a point in rehearsal now where I'm not really seeing it as much. I mean, I'm just looking at characters. So, you know, if Liz is in front of me, she's Shylock. And it's only in the courtship stuff that you really start to go, oh, yeah, those are two women here. And what does it mean for one woman to be playing a woman and the other one to be putting on the sort of identity of male, to be the aggressor in the situation or the assertive person in the situation, and those sort of identities? That's where you really see it. It really calls into question what it is to be female and male on the stage as we understand them, those roles.
But we're not playing them as females playing males, right? You're playing a male character. You're trying to then be a male. Is there a way in which you become a male when you play a character?
Physically, perhaps. I mean, we can't change who we are, of course, but we can change our gait. We can change where we sit as far as vocally is concerned. But still, I approach the character as, you know, Shylock is who he is. And but that's how we physically do it. And we also, you know, of course, we have makeup, and of course, we have costumes. Again, I can't necessarily hide who I am, but it will help, and it also helps me. Those aspects, or aspects, as we say in Chicago, they inform me as to who I am. So Shylock, the Jew, how he walks with his fellow Jews is different, perhaps, than how he would walk next to a Christian, or how on guard he is. Now, is that male? Not necessarily. Certainly I feel that as a woman, but then it's informative. As, you know, that's a little easier to play than perhaps Caitlin, who is Bassanio and is the love interest of our friend Leslie here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would just add two things to that. The physicality has been part of our world. We've had a movement person working with us. It's been a lot of fun watching the women on stage go, oh yeah, if you change the position of your pelvis and walk more in the way that guys walk, you take up different kind of space in the room.
That's true.
You know, that kind of stuff has been real fun. And a couple of places, things like where I've said, you know, your instinct as an actor of a female gender is to want to try to come to an accommodation with that line. You've tried to reach across to make a kind of instinctive way of bringing that person into your argument. I'm not sure that's where that male character is coming from, because men can sometimes come at it from a different point of view. But it usually has to do, what I notice on stage is that women instinctively in a number of places have reached for accommodation where male actors would not have done that.
Hearing you talk about the perspective of the stage itself, opening up the job of theater, the job of acting.
It's a great way to put it.
Is different than what happens in the play itself, mm-hmm. necessarily. You're still putting on Merchant of Venice, and you're going to try to be faithful to your understanding of it. Well, you're not doing anything necessarily different to it. But
I would agree with all of that across the board.
Okay. So as Portia, you don't have to be a man.
Well, I do in the trial scene. I actually do.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, it's so great. There's Portia has a line earlier in the play: "A maiden hath no tongue but thought." Mm-hmm. So there's this idea that while girls can't really say what they're thinking, but they sure can think it. Mm-hmm. And then there's this great opportunity to, you know, put on a pair of pants and really take the room and say all the things and use your, you know, brilliant feminine wiles and smarts and have this power that comes with being a man in this world that we're living in the play. Mm-hmm. It's great fun. And, you know, while I don't think I play the lines any differently as girl dressed as boy, physically, you can command the space in a different way. Vocally, you can command the space in a different way and try to, you know, sink your proverbial claws into the other characters to get what you want in a different way when the world around you sees you as a man, sees you as this powerful figure versus sees you as a girl who's only allowed to think things. Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a performative aspect to what Portia's doing here, not just trying to get to help out, but to perform, to be something mm-hmm. else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that whole question of being something else is so interesting. And the play reaches its sort of height of gender identity confusion in our production when Jessica gets dressed up as a boy to escape from her her father's house.
Yeah, Jessica is Portia.
Portia is Shylock's daughter.
Right.
So you have a woman getting dressed up as a boy to escape her father's house and into the arms of Lorenzo, who is a woman playing a male, right? So you have someone in the meta context of the play crossing gender, and you have someone inside. So you have, and he kisses her. So you have a woman playing a man and a woman playing a boy inside the play, and they come together, and there's this mustache moment, and they're just confused as to whether they should take the is it two boys kissing or is it two girls kissing or is it a girl and a boy kissing? Mm. Who's kissing, right? And at some point you're like, this is glorious.
That was Doug Storm speaking with Randy White, Liz Pazik, Leslie Ann Handelman about the Cardinal stage production of Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice using an all-female cast. The production opens October 28th and runs through November 13th. You can hear the full and only slightly edited 43-minute conversation for Arts Interchange online at wfhb.org/news/interchange.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Been having a little trouble getting on the internet? Get ready for some more. Last week, hackers knocked out massive portions of the net over massive portions of the United States. Repeated cyber attacks shut down major websites, including Amazon, Twitter, Netflix, SoundCloud, PayPal, and lots more. Tens of millions of people couldn't work, pay, or communicate for hours. And it's gonna happen again, because now we know who did it. You did. You own something that's connected to the internet. A printer, a router, a security camera, maybe even a thermostat. And when you brought it home and hooked it up, you didn't change the password. Hackers broke into millions of these devices, which were set to the standard factory default password, hooked them all together into what's called a botnet, and used them to overwhelm a central internet routing company in New Hampshire. The so-called Internet of Things has become the Internet of Threats. Internet connectivity is all the rage, and companies are pushing everything from refrigerators and cars to furnaces, doorknobs, stoves, parking meters, water faucets, and many, many more. If they haven't done golf balls yet, it's only a matter of time. Gartner Incorporated says that 6.4 billion connected devices are in use today, and it'll be over 20 billion in just 4 years. The government, the manufacturers, the internet service providers, the police, nobody can stop hackers from creating these botnets on the Internet of Things. The only people who can even slow them down are the people who own the things. You and me and our friends and relatives. The Indiana Attorney General put out an official warning last week. If you own anything connected to the internet, lock it down with a password you created, a strong password, and a different password for every thing or online account. Krebsen Security says all passwords should be a combination of nonsense words, numbers, symbols, and both upper and lowercase letters. Never use any word that can be found in the dictionary. Password cracking programs have them all loaded and can try tens of millions of combinations every second. The whole point is, make passwords impossible to guess and hard to crack. Make them at least 12 to 14 characters long, because each character you add makes it a whole order of magnitude harder to crack. If that makes a password difficult to remember, write it down. On paper, with a pen. You remember. Or you can use a master password website like LastPass, although that's a bit like putting all your eggs in one basket and asking someone else to hold the basket. What if that website goes down? So go fix your passwords. And until everybody does that for billions of things, get ready for traffic jams, potholes, and bridges washed out on the information superhighway. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford, Casey Ross, and Olivia Fahey, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Doug Storm.
Our engineers, Heather Perry and Rob Schoon. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Jill Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Janae Cummings. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. And stay tuned. For Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas.